The klaxon's shriek pierced through the perpetual hum of sub-level 847, dragging me from the brief respite that passed for sleep in the workers' quarters. My name is Jorik Voss, and like my father before him, and his father before that, I process the dead for the living in the bowels of Hive Optimus. The chronometer's sickly green glow showed 04:30 Imperial Standard Time, marking the start of another 16-hour shift in the bioprocessing facility that had consumed 3 generations of my bloodline. I rolled off the thin mattress that reeked of industrial disinfectant and decay, my joints protesting with the familiar ache that came from years of hauling corpses and operating the grinding machinery. The quarters housed 47 workers in a space designed for 20, our bunks stacked 3 high in the cramped chamber that served as our only refuge from the processing floor. The air recyclers wheezed overhead, their filters long overdue for replacement, circulating the same stale atmosphere that carried hints of the work that awaited us below. My coveralls hung from a hook beside my bunk, the fabric stained with substances I preferred not to identify. The Imperial Aquila emblazoned on the chest had faded to a dull gray, barely visible beneath layers of accumulated filth that no amount of scrubbing could remove. I pulled on the heavy boots that reached my knees, their reinforced soles designed to provide grip on surfaces slick with bodily fluids and rendered fat. The descent to the processing floor took me through a maze of corridors lined with pipes that leaked condensation and worse. The walls sweated constantly, their metal surfaces corroded by the acidic atmosphere that permeated the lower levels. Emergency lighting cast everything in a hellish red glow, the primary illumination having failed months ago with no sign of repair. My footsteps echoed off the narrow passages, joining the symphony of mechanical groans and distant screams that formed the background music of sub-level 847. The processing floor stretched before me like a vision from the darkest pits of hell. Conveyor belts snaked through the chamber, carrying their grisly cargo from the intake chutes to the grinding stations where workers like myself transformed the endless stream of corpses into the nutritional paste that fed the lower hive masses. The facility processed approximately 3,000 bodies per day, their origins ranging from natural deaths in the upper levels to the casualties of gang warfare and industrial accidents that claimed lives throughout the hive. I took my position at Station 7, where the conveyor delivered bodies in various states of decomposition. The grinding apparatus before me consisted of massive rotating blades powered by a plasma generator that hummed with barely contained energy. My job required me to sort the corpses by condition, removing any metallic implants or augmetics that might damage the machinery, before feeding them into the grinder that reduced human remains to a protein-rich slurry. The stench hit me like a physical blow, a combination of rotting flesh, chemical preservatives, and the metallic tang of blood that had soaked into every surface of the facility. My respirator helped filter the worst of it, but nothing could completely block the smell that had become as familiar as my own heartbeat. The newer workers often vomited during their first weeks, their bodies rejecting the assault on their senses, but I had long since adapted to the environment that would be my tomb. The first body of the shift arrived on the belt, a middle-aged man whose cause of death appeared to be blunt force trauma to the skull. His face had been caved in by something heavy, leaving a crater where his features should have been. I hooked him under the arms and dragged him to the sorting table, checking for any augmetic implants that needed removal before processing. His clothing had been stripped away at the intake level, leaving only pale flesh marked by the bruises and cuts that told the story of his final moments. The grinding process itself produced sounds that haunted my dreams during the few hours of rest I managed to steal. The wet crunch of breaking bones mixed with the mechanical whir of the blades, creating a rhythm that marked the passage of time in my underground world. Each body took approximately 4 minutes to process completely, the human form reduced to a thick paste that flowed through pipes to the packaging stations, where it would be formed into the ration bars that sustained millions of hive dwellers. Servo skulls drifted overhead like mechanical vultures, their optical sensors recording every movement and gesture for the Adeptus Mechanicus overseers who monitored our productivity from their elevated control stations. The skulls had been fashioned from the remains of executed workers, their hollow eye sockets fitted with advanced surveillance equipment that tracked our every action. I had learned to ignore their presence, but the newer workers often flinched when the skulls descended for closer inspection. Overseer Malthus prowled the floor with the predatory grace of a hunting cat, his red robes marking him as a junior member of the Mechanicus hierarchy. His face had been replaced with a bronze mask that displayed scrolling data feeds, while his left arm had been augmented with a shock maul that crackled with electrical energy. He moved between the stations with mechanical precision, his augmetic legs carrying him silently across the blood-slicked floor as he searched for signs of inefficiency or insubordination. The bodies continued their endless procession down the conveyor belt, each one carrying the weight of a life extinguished in the sprawling darkness of the hive. I processed them with the methodical efficiency that came from years of practice, my hands moving automatically as my mind retreated to safer places. A young man with track marks covering his arms, probably an addict from the chem dens of the lower levels. An elderly woman whose emaciated frame spoke of slow starvation in the underhive. A child whose small body showed signs of systematic abuse before whatever final violence had claimed his life. The psychological toll of the work manifested in different ways among the processing crew. Some workers developed nervous tics, their hands shaking uncontrollably when they tried to eat or sleep. Others retreated into complete silence, their minds shutting down to protect themselves from the horror of their daily existence. A few simply snapped, their sanity finally shattered by the endless parade of death that defined their world. I had begun to notice patterns in the bodies that troubled me in ways I could not fully articulate. The number of fresh corpses had increased dramatically over the past month, their flesh still warm when they arrived at my station. These bodies showed signs of violent death that seemed different from the usual gang warfare or industrial accidents. Deep gouges marked their torsos, as if they had been attacked by something with claws rather than conventional weapons. Bite marks covered their throats and limbs, the wounds too large and irregular to have been made by human teeth. The facility's servitors provided another source of constant dread, their lobotomized forms shambling through the processing floor as they performed their programmed tasks. These wretches had once been human, their minds scrubbed clean and replaced with basic machine programming that allowed them to function as living tools. Their flesh had begun to rot in the humid environment, creating patches of exposed bone and muscle that wept constantly. When their coordination failed, they would stumble and fall, spilling their mechanical innards across the floor in a tangle of wires and putrid organs. One servitor near my station had developed a malfunction that caused it to repeat the same motion endlessly, its remaining hand scraping against the metal surface of a cleaning station until its fingers had worn down to bloody stumps. The sound of bone on metal created a rhythmic scratching that served as a counterpoint to the grinding machinery, a percussion section in the symphony of industrial horror that surrounded us. The work continued without pause, the conveyor belt delivering its cargo with relentless efficiency. My back ached from the constant bending and lifting, while my hands had developed permanent calluses from gripping the corpses and operating the machinery. The protective gloves provided little insulation from the cold flesh of the dead, and I could feel the chill seeping into my bones with each body I processed. Malthus approached my station during the eighth hour of the shift, his bronze mask reflecting the red emergency lighting as he reviewed the data streaming across his optical display. His augmetic arm twitched slightly, the shock maul crackling with barely contained energy as he observed my work. The overseer's presence created a zone of fear around him, the other workers unconsciously moving away from his mechanical form. The bodies arriving at my station had grown increasingly disturbing as the shift progressed. Several showed signs of partial consumption, with chunks of flesh torn away from their limbs and torsos. The wounds appeared to have been made by teeth, but the bite patterns were unlike anything I had encountered in my years of processing human remains. The marks suggested something larger than a human mouth, with canine teeth that had penetrated deep into the muscle tissue. I continued my work with growing unease, the familiar routine providing little comfort against the mounting evidence that something had changed in the hive above. The bodies told stories of violence that went beyond the usual brutality of hive life, speaking of predators that hunted in the darkness beyond the reach of imperial authority. Each corpse added another piece to a puzzle that I feared to complete, its implications too terrible to contemplate. The grinding machinery consumed the evidence of whatever stalked the upper levels, reducing the clues to anonymous protein paste that would feed the masses without revealing the horror of its origins. My hands moved automatically as I fed the bodies into the grinder, but my mind raced with questions that had no answers. The familiar weight of another corpse settled onto my sorting table, and I prepared to continue the work that had defined my existence for as long as I could remember. The notification arrived during the 14th hour of my shift, delivered by a servo skull that descended from the shadows above Station 7 with the silent grace of a carrion bird. The parchment clutched in its mechanical talons bore the crimson seal of the administratum, and my hands trembled as I broke the wax to read the contents. The Gothic script informed me that my production quotas had fallen below acceptable levels for the third consecutive month, and immediate relocation to the Underhive was mandated under Imperial Decree 847 Alpha. My knees buckled as the full weight of the sentence struck me. The Underhive represented everything the workers of sub-level 847 feared most, a lawless wasteland where the dregs of humanity fought over scraps in the toxic depths beneath the hive proper. I had processed enough corpses from those depths to know what awaited me in the chemical-soaked darkness below. The servo skull waited patiently as I read the document twice, its optical sensors recording my reaction for the overseers who had already moved on to more pressing concerns. Overseer Malthus appeared at my station within minutes, his bronze mask displaying scrolling data that confirmed my new status. His augmetic arm gestured toward the exit with mechanical indifference, the shock maul crackling with electrical energy that seemed to mock my predicament. The other workers avoided eye contact as I gathered my meager possessions, their faces reflecting the knowledge that any of them could receive similar notification at any moment. The descent to the Underhive took place in a cargo elevator that reeked of industrial lubricants and human waste. The lift carried me through level after level of the Hive's infrastructure, past the familiar corridors of the worker districts and into regions I had never seen. The walls grew more corroded with each passing floor, their metal surfaces eaten away by acidic condensation that dripped constantly from overhead pipes. Emergency lighting flickered sporadically, casting shifting shadows that seemed to move independently of their sources. The elevator shuddered to a halt at level 1247, and the doors opened to reveal a landscape that defied comprehension. The Underhive stretched before me like a vision from the darkest corners of human imagination, its toxic atmosphere shimmering with chemical vapors that burned my throat with each breath. Massive pipes snaked through the air overhead, leaking streams of industrial waste that formed rivers of poison flowing through the twisted streets below. The very air seemed alive with corruption, thick with particulates that made my eyes water and my lungs burn. I stumbled from the elevator onto a platform constructed from rusted metal grating, my boots splashing through puddles of liquid that glowed with an unhealthy phosphorescence. The sound of dripping water echoed constantly through the cavern-like space, punctuated by distant screams and the rattle of automatic weapons fire. Makeshift structures rose from the toxic landscape like tumors, their walls constructed from salvaged industrial debris and held together with whatever materials their inhabitants could scavenge. The smell hit me like a physical assault, a combination of rotting flesh, chemical runoff, and human filth that made the processing floor seem pleasant by comparison. My respirator provided minimal protection against the toxic atmosphere, and I could feel the poisonous vapors seeping through its filters with each labored breath. The temperature was oppressive, heated by the industrial processes above and trapped by the low ceiling that pressed down on the Underhive like a metal sky. I made my way through the twisted streets, following paths that had been carved through piles of industrial waste and abandoned machinery. The buildings around me defied any conventional understanding of architecture, their walls constructed from sheets of corrugated metal, broken concrete, and salvaged components from long-dead machines. Windows were rare and usually covered with plastic sheeting or metal plates, their occupants preferring the safety of darkness to the vulnerability of exposure. The inhabitants of this poisoned realm moved through the streets like specters, their forms twisted by generations of exposure to toxic chemicals and radioactive waste. Mutations were commonplace among the population, their bodies adapted to the hostile environment in ways that spoke of humanity's desperate struggle for survival. I saw men with extra limbs growing from their torsos, women whose skin had taken on a metallic sheen from chemical exposure, and children whose eyes glowed with an inner light that suggested genetic damage beyond repair. My first encounter with the local gangers occurred near a structure that might have once been a water treatment facility. Three figures emerged from the shadows between rusted pipes, their bodies marked by crude tattoos and ritual scarification that identified them as members of one of the Underhive's countless criminal organizations. Their leader bore the distinctive marks of chemical burns across his face. The flesh melted and reformed into a mask of scar tissue that obscured his features. The gangers moved with the predatory confidence of apex predators in their natural habitat, their weapons drawn and pointed in my direction. I recognized the stub guns they carried from my time processing the bodies of their victims, crude but effective weapons that fired solid slugs capable of punching through metal plating. Their clothing consisted of salvaged flak armor and leather garments reinforced with metal studs, practical gear for surviving in the toxic wasteland of the Underhive. They demanded tribute for passage through their territory, their voices distorted by the respirators they wore to filter the poisonous atmosphere. I offered them the few throne gelt I had managed to save from my wages, but the amount proved insufficient for their standards. The leader gestured toward a nearby alley with his weapon, and I understood that my options had been reduced to compliance or death. The alley led to a courtyard surrounded by towering piles of industrial waste, their surfaces crawling with vermin that had adapted to the toxic environment. Rats the size of small dogs scurried through the debris, their fur falling out in patches to reveal skin that glowed with radioactive contamination. The gangers forced me to kneel in the center of the courtyard while they discussed my fate in their crude dialect, their words punctuated by the constant sound of dripping chemicals from overhead pipes. I managed to escape their attention when a rival gang launched an attack on their position, the air filling with the crack of gunfire and the screams of wounded men. The battle erupted with sudden violence, both sides using the industrial debris as cover while they exchanged fire across the courtyard. I crawled through the toxic sludge that covered the ground, my coveralls soaking up chemicals that burned my skin through the fabric. The fighting continued for what felt like hours, the gangers displaying a casual brutality that spoke of lives spent in constant warfare. Bodies fell into the poisonous puddles that dotted the courtyard, their blood mixing with the industrial runoff to create new patterns of contamination. I pressed myself against the base of a massive pipe and waited for the violence to subside, my heart hammering against my ribs as bullets whined overhead. When the shooting finally stopped, I emerged from my hiding place to find the courtyard littered with corpses in various states of mutilation. The surviving gangers had already begun stripping the bodies of useful equipment, their movements efficient and practiced. They paid no attention to my presence as I picked my way through the carnage, apparently considering me beneath their notice now that the immediate threat had passed. I found temporary shelter in the ruins of what had once been a small chapel dedicated to the Emperor, its walls blackened by chemical exposure and its windows long since shattered. The interior reeked of human waste and decay, but it provided protection from the toxic rain that fell constantly from the pipes overhead. Other refugees had claimed portions of the space, their makeshift bedrolls arranged around the perimeter of the main chamber. The chapel's altar had been converted into a crude still for distilling drinking water from the contaminated sources available in the Underhive. The apparatus consisted of salvaged tubing and metal containers heated by a small plasma torch, its blue flame casting dancing shadows on the corroded walls. The water it produced was barely potable, tasting of chemicals and metal, but it represented the difference between life and death in the poisoned depths. My fellow refugees represented the dregs of Hive society, individuals who had fallen through the cracks of the Imperial system and found themselves trapped in the Underhive's toxic embrace. Former factory workers who had lost their positions due to injury or age, criminals fleeing justice in the upper levels, and families whose breadwinners had died in industrial accidents. They moved through the chapel with the cautious steps of prey animals, their eyes constantly scanning for threats that might emerge from the shadows. The nights in the Underhive brought new horrors as the temperature dropped and the toxic vapors grew thicker. The darkness seemed alive with movement, shapes that flitted between the industrial debris and disappeared when observed directly. The sound of footsteps echoed through the metal corridors, but their source remained hidden in the maze of pipes and machinery that filled the Underhive's depths. I learned to recognize the signs of the various predators that hunted in the Underhive's darkness. The Corpse Grinder cult had established a presence in the deeper levels, their members marked by ritual scarification and crude surgical modifications that enhanced their ability to hunt human prey. These cannibalistic fanatics viewed the Underhive's population as nothing more than meat to be harvested, their rituals involving the consumption of human flesh in ceremonies dedicated to their twisted beliefs. My first encounter with the Corpse Grinders occurred during my second week in the Underhive, when I witnessed one of their hunting parties stalking a group of scavengers through the ruins of an old manufactorum. The cultists moved with inhuman grace through the industrial debris, their bodies modified with crude augmetics that enhanced their speed and strength. Their leader wore a mask fashioned from human skulls, its empty eye sockets filled with glowing optical implants that allowed him to see in the perpetual darkness. The hunt unfolded with terrifying efficiency as the cultists surrounded their prey and began their attack. The scavengers fought desperately with improvised weapons, but they were no match for the enhanced predators that had been stalking them. The screams of the dying echoed through the metal corridors as the Corpse Grinders began their grisly work, their ritual knives flashing in the dim light as they prepared their victims for consumption. I watched from my hiding place behind a massive gear assembly as the cultists performed their cannibalistic ritual, their movements choreographed by years of practice. They consumed portions of their victims while the flesh was still warm, their enhanced digestive systems allowing them to process the toxic meat that would poison normal humans. The remainder of the bodies was carved into portions for later consumption, the cultists treating human flesh as nothing more than another resource to be exploited. The living conditions in the Underhive grew more desperate with each passing day as I struggled to find food and clean water in the toxic wasteland. The makeshift shelters constructed from industrial debris provided minimal protection from the chemical rain that fell constantly from the pipes overhead. Disease spread rapidly through the population, their weakened immune systems unable to cope with the constant exposure to toxins and radiation. I witnessed the strong preying upon the weak in a daily struggle for survival that reduced human interaction to its most basic elements. Children were abandoned by parents who could no longer feed them, left to fend for themselves in the toxic streets, or consumed by the desperate adults who had reached the limits of their endurance. The elderly and infirm simply disappeared, their bodies adding to the piles of corpses that accumulated in the darker corners of the Underhive. The chemical runoff from the industrial processes above created rivers of poison that flowed through the Underhive streets, their surfaces covered with a film of toxic foam that glowed with an unhealthy light. The water corroded everything it touched, eating through metal and flesh with equal efficiency. I learned to avoid these streams, but the vapors they produced were inescapable, filling the air with caustic fumes that burned my lungs and made my eyes water constantly. The stench of fresh blood drew me deeper into the Underhive's twisted corridors, following a trail that led through sections I had never dared explore during my weeks in the toxic depths. The metallic tang cut through the usual cocktail of chemical vapors and human waste, creating a scent that triggered memories of my time at the processing facility. Something about the smell felt wrong, too clean and too recent for the poisoned wasteland that surrounded me. I pressed myself against the corroded wall of a maintenance tunnel, my respirator struggling to filter the increasingly thick atmosphere as I moved further from the inhabited areas. The emergency lighting had failed completely in this section, leaving me to navigate by the faint phosphorescent glow of chemical runoff that seeped through cracks in the metal plating. My boots splashed through puddles of contaminated water that reflected the sickly light, creating ripples that distorted the shadows dancing across the tunnel walls. The source of the blood trail became apparent as I rounded a corner, and discovered a processing station that had been carved from the Underhive's industrial infrastructure. The facility operated with a crude efficiency that reminded me of my former workplace, but the purpose here was far more sinister than simple corpse grinding. Bodies hung from meat hooks attached to overhead pipes, their forms suspended in neat rows that stretched into the darkness beyond my vision. These corpses were different from the usual Underhive casualties I had grown accustomed to seeing. Their flesh remained pink and healthy, unmarked by the chemical burns and radiation damage that characterized the local population. The wounds that had killed them showed a disturbing pattern of deep gouges and bite marks, as if they had been attacked by something with claws and teeth far larger than any human possessed. Several bodies showed signs of systematic drainage, their blood collected in metal containers that lined the floor beneath the hanging forms. I crept closer to examine the makeshift abattoir, my curiosity overcoming the instinctive fear that screamed at me to flee. The bodies belonged to citizens from the upper hive levels, their clean clothing and unmarked skin identifying them as members of the middle classes who should never have found themselves in the toxic depths. Their faces bore expressions of absolute terror, frozen in the moment of death as whatever had killed them tore through their flesh with inhuman savagery. The processing equipment consisted of salvaged industrial machinery that had been modified for its grisly purpose. Conveyor belts moved the drained corpses through stations where crude butchering took place, the meat carved into portions that were packed into refrigerated containers. The entire operation displayed a level of organization that spoke of careful planning and coordination, far beyond the capabilities of the usual Underhive gangs. Movement in the shadows beyond the processing station caught my attention, and I pressed myself deeper into the concealment of a massive pipe junction. The figures that emerged from the darkness moved with an unsettling gait that seemed part human and part something else entirely. Their forms were tall and unnaturally thin, with elongated limbs that ended in clawed hands capable of gripping the metal surfaces with ease. Their heads bore a distinctly alien shape, elongated skulls that housed eyes reflecting the dim light like polished obsidian. These creatures worked alongside human figures who moved with the mechanical precision of devoted servants, their actions coordinated in a way that suggested complete subservience to their inhuman masters. The humans wore the remnants of Arbiti's uniforms and PDF fatigues, their equipment modified with additional armor plating and weapons that seemed designed for close combat rather than ranged engagement. Their faces showed the glazed expression of complete devotion, as if their minds had been scrubbed clean and replaced with unwavering loyalty. I watched in growing horror as the creatures supervised the butchering process, their clawed hands directing the human workers with gestures that conveyed complex instructions without the need for verbal communication. The efficiency of the operation suggested that this facility had been operating for some time, processing hundreds of bodies from the upper hive levels and distributing the meat to destinations I could only guess at. The true nature of the operation became clear when I observed one of the creatures consuming a portion of raw flesh torn from a fresh corpse. The alien being fed with a hunger that seemed to go beyond mere sustenance, its feeding creating wet sounds that echoed through the processing chamber. The human workers watched the feeding with expressions of religious ecstasy, as if witnessing a sacred ritual that confirmed their faith in whatever twisted doctrine they served. My attempt to retreat from the processing station was interrupted by the arrival of additional creatures emerging from tunnels that led deeper into the Underhive. These beings moved with the fluid grace of natural predators, their multiple limbs allowing them to navigate the vertical surfaces of the industrial infrastructure with ease. Their presence filled the air with a scent that reminded me of the ocean, salty and organic in a way that seemed completely alien to the chemical atmosphere of the hive. The creatures communicated through a series of clicks and hisses that created patterns of sound unlike anything I had encountered in human language. Their conversations seemed to involve complex planning, with different members of the group taking turns to contribute information, while others listened with the focused attention of military commanders receiving intelligence reports. The human servants remained silent during these exchanges, their role apparently limited to manual labor under alien supervision. I realized that my hiding place had been compromised, when one of the creatures turned its attention toward the pipe junction where I crouched. Its elongated skull swiveled in my direction with mechanical precision, and I could see the intelligence burning in its dark eyes as it processed my presence. The creature's mouth opened to reveal rows of needle-sharp teeth designed for tearing flesh, while its clawed hands flexed in anticipation of violence. The pursuit began immediately as the creature released a sound that combined elements of a hiss and a scream, alerting its companions to the presence of an intruder. I abandoned my hiding place and ran through the maintenance tunnels, my boots splashing through contaminated water as I sought escape routes through the maze of pipes and machinery. The sounds of pursuit echoed behind me, multiple sets of claws scraping against metal surfaces as the creatures gave chase. The aliens moved through the tunnel system with an ease that spoke of intimate familiarity with the Underhive's layout. They could climb vertical surfaces and navigate through spaces too narrow for human passage, their flexible bodies allowing them to pursue me through routes I had thought would provide safety. The clicking sounds of their communication followed me through the darkness, coordinating their hunt with the efficiency of a pack predator. I found temporary refuge in a waste processing chamber where the air was so thick with toxic vapors that even my failing respirator could barely function. The creatures seemed reluctant to enter the chamber, their alien physiology apparently vulnerable to the concentrated chemical atmosphere that had accumulated in the enclosed space. I pressed myself against the far wall and listened to their frustrated hissing as they searched for alternative routes to reach me. The respite allowed me to observe the full extent of their hunting capabilities as they explored the chamber's perimeter. Their claws could penetrate metal plating with ease, leaving deep gouges in surfaces that should have been impervious to organic weapons. Their eyesight functioned perfectly in the absolute darkness that filled the maintenance tunnels, while their hearing could detect the slightest sound from considerable distances. My escape from the waste chamber required me to crawl through a drainage pipe that led to a different section of the Underhive, my body pressed against surfaces slick with industrial runoff that burned my skin through my coveralls. The pipe was barely wide enough to accommodate my shoulders, and I could hear the creatures attempting to follow me through the narrow passage. Their frustrated sounds echoed through the metal tube as they realized their larger forms could not navigate the constricted space. The drainage pipe deposited me in a section of the Underhive that had been abandoned even by the desperate refugees who inhabited the toxic depths. The structures here showed signs of systematic destruction, their walls torn apart by claws and their interiors stripped of anything useful. Bodies lay scattered throughout the area, their remains showing the same pattern of wounds I had observed in the processing facility. I began to understand the true scope of the infestation as I explored the abandoned section and discovered evidence of a coordinated campaign to clear the area of human habitation. The creatures had been methodically hunting through the Underhive's population, selecting victims based on criteria that remained unclear to me. The bodies they left behind were invariably those of the sick, the elderly, and the heavily mutated, while the healthy specimens had been taken elsewhere for processing. The realization that the infestation extended far beyond the single processing facility filled me with a dread that went beyond simple fear for my own survival. The creatures had established a network of facilities throughout the Underhive, each one processing human flesh for distribution to destinations in the upper levels. The scale of the operation suggested that significant portions of the Hive's population had been feeding on human meat without their knowledge. My investigation led me to a communications hub where the creatures had established a coordination center for their activities. The facility buzzed with alien technology that had been integrated with human equipment, creating hybrid systems that served purposes I could not comprehend. The air filled with the constant chatter of their clicking language as they coordinated hunting parties and processing schedules across multiple locations. The hub revealed the true extent of their infiltration into the Hive's infrastructure. Maps displayed on crude screens showed the locations of processing facilities, safe houses, and recruitment centers throughout the Underhive and extending into the middle levels. The creatures had been working systematically to establish control over key areas, using their human servants to maintain the facade of normal operations while they pursued their alien agenda. I discovered that the infected humans included members of the Arbites and PDF forces who had been tasked with maintaining order in the hive. These corrupted law enforcement officers now served as the creature's primary agents in the upper levels, using their authority to identify suitable victims and arrange for their transport to the processing facilities. The corruption extended through multiple levels of the hive's hierarchy, suggesting that the infestation had been growing for years without detection. The evidence of systematic infiltration painted a picture of a conspiracy that reached into the highest levels of the hive's administration. The creatures had been patient in their approach, slowly corrupting key individuals while building the infrastructure necessary to support their feeding requirements. The human servants displayed a fanatical devotion that suggested their minds had been altered in ways that went beyond simple coercion. My exploration of the communications hub was interrupted by the arrival of a hunting party that had been tracking me through the abandoned section. The creatures moved with renewed purpose, their previous frustration replaced by the focused determination of predators who had cornered their prey. I could hear their claws scraping against metal surfaces as they approached the hub from multiple directions, cutting off potential escape routes. The facility's layout provided limited options for concealment, and I realized that my discovery of their coordination center had marked me for elimination. The creatures could not allow knowledge of their operations to reach the upper levels, where it might trigger a response from Imperial authorities. My death had become a necessity for the continuation of their systematic harvesting of the hive's population. I retreated deeper into the communications hub, seeking any route that might lead to safety while the sounds of pursuit grew closer. The alien technology hummed around me, its purpose alien but its threat unmistakable. The creatures had built something monstrous in the depths of the hive, and I had stumbled into the heart of their operation with no way to warn the millions of people who remained unaware of the predators that hunted among them. The hunting party cornered me in the deepest section of the communications hub, where the alien technology merged with human machinery in configurations that defied comprehension. My desperate flight through the facility had led me into a dead end, surrounded by pulsing conduits that carried data between the creature's coordination centers throughout the underhive. The walls around me hummed with activity as information flowed through the hybrid systems, coordinating the harvest operations that had been consuming the hive's population for months. The creatures approached with the patient confidence of predators who knew their prey had nowhere left to run. Their elongated forms moved through the cramped space with fluid grace, their claws finding purchase on surfaces that would have been impossible for human hands to grip. The lead creature's obsidian eyes reflected the sickly light of the alien displays, and I could see the intelligence burning behind them as it calculated the most efficient method of ending my life. My capture came swiftly as additional creatures emerged from ventilation shafts and maintenance tunnels, their coordinated assault leaving me no opportunity for escape. Clawed hands seized my arms and legs with strength that crushed bone, while others grasped my torso and lifted me from the ground. The pain was immediate and overwhelming, but the creatures seemed careful to avoid inflicting fatal injuries during the capture process. They carried me through a network of tunnels that extended far deeper into the underhive than I had imagined possible. The passages had been carved from the living rock beneath the hive's foundations, their walls lined with the same organic technology that had filled the communications hub. Bioluminescent strips provided illumination that cast everything in an eerie blue-green glow, while the air grew thick with moisture that carried the scent of the ocean. The journey ended at a massive chamber that had been hollowed out from the bedrock beneath Hive Optimus. The space stretched beyond the limits of my vision, its ceiling supported by pillars of living tissue that pulsed with their own internal rhythms. The walls were covered with a substance that resembled coral, its surface dotted with openings that served as entrances to smaller chambers branching off from the main cavern. The bioprocessing facility that occupied the chamber's center represented the culmination of the creature's systematic harvesting operations. Human bodies hung from organic frameworks that grew from the floor like twisted trees, their forms suspended in various stages of processing. The living machinery that surrounded them combined alien biology with salvaged human technology, creating hybrid systems that served purposes too horrible to contemplate. My captors deposited me in a holding area where dozens of other prisoners awaited their turn in the processing chambers. The captives represented a cross-section of the Hive's population, from underhive refugees to middle-class citizens who had been taken from the upper levels. Their faces showed the hollow expressions of people who had witnessed horrors that shattered their understanding of reality. The holding area consisted of organic cells that had been grown from the same coral-like substance that covered the chamber walls. The barriers were warm to the touch and seemed to pulse with their own heartbeat, while the floor beneath our feet felt spongy and yielded slightly under pressure. The cells provided no privacy or comfort, forcing the prisoners to huddle together for warmth in the humid atmosphere. I learned the true purpose of the facility by observing the processing chambers that surrounded our holding area. The creatures had created a breeding program designed to produce successive generations of hybrid offspring, each one more alien than the last. Human prisoners were kept alive as breeding stock, their bodies used to gestate creatures that combined human and alien characteristics in increasingly disturbing combinations. The breeding chambers housed women who had been infected with alien genetic material, their bodies swollen with pregnancies that defied natural law. The gestation process was accelerated beyond human norms, with new offspring emerging every few weeks in a cycle that seemed designed to maximize production. The mothers remained conscious throughout the process, their minds intact but their bodies no longer under their own control. The hybrid offspring that emerged from these forced pregnancies showed characteristics that blended human and alien traits in ways that created beings perfectly adapted for infiltration. The earliest generations retained mostly human appearance, allowing them to pass undetected among the Hive's population. Later generations showed increasingly alien features, with elongated limbs, enhanced sensory organs, and the distinctive skull shape of their inhuman fathers. Hybrid overseers moved through the breeding chambers with the authority of plantation masters, their partially human appearance allowing them to communicate with both the alien creatures and their human servants. These beings had been born from the same breeding program that now consumed new victims, their existence proof that the infestation had been active for years. Their faces showed intelligence and cunning, but their eyes held the cold calculation of predators who viewed humans as nothing more than resources to be exploited. The overseers directed human servants who maintained the breeding chambers and tended to the needs of the gestating mothers. These workers moved with the mechanical devotion I had observed in the processing facility, their minds apparently altered by exposure to alien influence. They administered nutrients and medical care to ensure the survival of both mothers and offspring, their actions guided by knowledge that seemed to come from sources beyond human understanding. The feeding process that sustained the facility's operations involved the systematic consumption of human flesh by the alien creatures and their hybrid offspring. The meat was prepared in processing stations that reduced human bodies to portions suitable for different stages of the life cycle. Fresh blood was collected and distributed through organic conduits that carried it to chambers where the youngest hybrids fed directly from the source. I witnessed the arrival of new prisoners who had been captured during hunting operations in the upper levels of the Hive. The transport system that brought them to the facility consisted of organic tubes that could move human bodies through the tunnel network without the need for mechanical conveyance. The prisoners emerged from these tubes unconscious and disoriented, their bodies marked by secretions that had kept them sedated during transport. The selection process that determined each prisoner's fate was overseen by the alien creatures themselves, who examined the captives with the critical eye of livestock inspectors. Healthy specimens were marked for the breeding program, while others were designated for immediate processing into food. The elderly and infirm were killed quickly, their bodies added to the supply of fresh meat that sustained the facility's operations. My own examination revealed that I had been selected for a different purpose entirely. The creatures seemed interested in my knowledge of the Hive's upper levels and the industrial processes that sustained its population. They conducted their interrogation through methods that bypassed verbal communication, using techniques that extracted information directly from my mind while leaving my consciousness intact to experience the violation. The interrogation revealed the scope of their infiltration plan, which extended far beyond the simple harvesting of human flesh. The creatures were preparing for what they called the Day of Ascension, a coordinated uprising that would see their hybrid agents seize control of key facilities throughout the hive. The breeding program was designed to produce enough infiltrators to replace significant portions of the hive's administrative and security apparatus. The plan involved the systematic replacement of human officials with hybrid duplicates who could maintain the facade of normal operations while serving their alien masters. The process had already begun in the lower levels, where entire administrative departments had been replaced without detection. The hybrids possessed the memories and knowledge of their human predecessors, allowing them to perform their duties while advancing the creature's agenda. The ultimate goal of the infestation was to prepare Hive Optimus for consumption by a larger alien force that waited in the void beyond the planet's atmosphere. The creatures referred to this force as the Hive Fleet, a vast swarm of alien ships that would descend upon the world once the signal was given. The breeding program and infiltration operations were designed to ensure that the planet's defenses would be compromised when the fleet arrived. The signal that would summon the Hive Fleet was to be broadcast from a psychic beacon that the creatures had constructed in the deepest chambers of their facility. The beacon required the life force of thousands of human victims to power its transmission, their deaths providing the energy needed to reach across the void. The Day of Ascension would see the systematic execution of the Hive's population, their life energy channeled into the beacon that would doom the entire world. I learned that Hive Optimus was merely the first target in a campaign that would eventually consume the entire planet. The creatures had established similar operations in other Hive cities, each one preparing for the coordinated uprising that would eliminate human resistance. The scale of the conspiracy was beyond anything I had imagined, involving millions of alien infiltrators working in perfect coordination toward a common goal. The breeding chambers continued their grisly work around me as I absorbed the full horror of what I had discovered. New generations of hybrids emerged from their human mothers with increasing frequency, their alien characteristics becoming more pronounced with each successive birth. The facility had become a factory for producing the infiltrators who would ensure the success of the coming invasion. My confinement in the holding area lasted for weeks as I watched the systematic processing of my fellow prisoners. The creatures maintained their operations with ruthless efficiency, converting human bodies into food while breeding new generations of infiltrators. The organic machinery that sustained the facility pulsed with alien life, its rhythms synchronized with the heartbeats of the captive mothers who fed the endless cycle of birth and death. The approach of the Day of Ascension was marked by increased activity throughout the facility as the creatures prepared for their final assault on the hive above. Additional prisoners arrived daily, their bodies destined to fuel the psychic beacon that would summon the hive fleet. The hybrid overseers moved with renewed urgency, their actions coordinated by signals that passed through the organic communication network. The beacon itself was revealed to be a massive organic structure that had been grown in the chamber's deepest section. The device resembled a grotesque flower with petals made of living tissue, its surface covered with neural networks that pulsed with psychic energy. The structure fed on the life force of sacrificed humans, converting their deaths into the signal that would reach across the void to guide the hive fleet to its target. I realized that my own death was approaching, as the creatures began selecting prisoners for the final sacrifice that would power the beacon. The process involved draining the life force from victims while they remained conscious, their suffering amplifying the psychic signal that would doom the world. The organic machinery that surrounded the beacon was designed to extract maximum energy from each death, ensuring that no life force was wasted. My attempt to escape came during the chaos that preceded the Day of Ascension, when the facility's routine was disrupted by preparations for the final assault. I managed to break free from my organic cell during a moment when the hybrid overseers were distracted by their coordination duties. The holding area's security systems were focused on preventing mass escapes rather than tracking individual prisoners, allowing me to slip away unnoticed. The escape route I chose led through the breeding chambers, where the sight of the gestating mothers filled me with renewed determination to warn the hive above. The women trapped in the organic framework showed no recognition of my presence, their minds lost in the alien influence that controlled their bodies. Their swollen forms continued the endless cycle of birth that fed the creature's invasion plans. My flight through the facility revealed the full extent of the operation that had been hidden beneath Hive Optimus. The chamber system extended for kilometers through the bedrock, each section serving a specific purpose in the creature's grand design. Processing centers converted human flesh into food, while breeding chambers produced new generations of infiltrators. Communication hubs coordinated operations across multiple Hive cities, their organic networks carrying signals that span continents. The pursuit began immediately as the facility's security systems detected my escape. Hybrid hunters emerged from concealed positions throughout the chamber system, their enhanced senses allowing them to track my movement through the organic corridors. Their partially human appearance made them more dangerous than the pure alien creatures, as they could anticipate human behavior while possessing inhuman speed and strength. The hunters drove me deeper into the facility's lower levels, where the organic architecture became increasingly alien and hostile. The walls pulsed with malevolent life, while the floor beneath my feet felt soft and yielding like living flesh. The air grew thick with spores that made breathing difficult, and I could feel the alien influence pressing against my mind with increasing intensity. My final confrontation came in the chamber that housed the psychic beacon, where the creatures had begun the ritual that would summon the Hive fleet. The organic structure at the chamber's center glowed with accumulated life force, its neural networks crackling with psychic energy as it prepared to broadcast its signal across the void. The sight of the beacon filled me with the understanding that my world was already doomed, its fate sealed by the systematic infiltration that had proceeded undetected for years. The purestrained Genestealers that emerged from the beacon's base represented the ultimate expression of the alien species that had infested the Hive. These creatures possessed none of the human characteristics that marked their hybrid offspring, their forms perfectly adapted for killing and consuming human prey. Their forearms ended in claws that could rend metal, while their elongated skulls housed brains capable of coordinating complex hunting strategies. The final moments of my life unfolded with the terrible clarity that comes with absolute certainty of death. The purestrains moved with inhuman speed, their claws finding purchase on my flesh before I could react. The pain was immediate and overwhelming as they began tearing me apart, their feeding frenzy driven by instincts that had evolved over millions of years of predation. As my vision faded and my life ebbed away, I could see the psychic beacon beginning its transmission to the void above. The signal would reach the Hive fleet within hours, guiding the alien swarm to a world that had already been prepared for consumption. The systematic infiltration of Hive Optimus had ensured that humanity's defenses would crumble from within, leaving the population helpless before the approaching storm. The day of ascension had begun, and with it, the end of everything I had ever known. The creatures had succeeded in their patient campaign of infiltration and corruption, transforming the Hive into a trap that would deliver millions of human lives to their alien masters. My death marked the beginning of a harvest that would consume entire worlds, spreading across the galaxy like a plague that devoured everything in its path. The last thing I saw before darkness claimed me was the beacon's signal reaching into the void, calling to the Hive fleet that waited among the stars. The creatures had won their long campaign of infiltration and preparation, and now the true horror would begin as the alien swarm descended upon a world that had already been lost from within.